It's 11:59 at Radio Free America, and this is Uncle Sam with music and the truth until dawn. Right now, I got a few words for some of our brothers and sisters in the occupied zone. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route.
The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House.
Those who do nothing are inviting shame as well as violence. Those who act boldly are recognizing right as well as reality.
All right, welcome back to Awake the Iron. We have a really special guest coming on right now on the phone with us. Her name is Victoria Palmer, and she's the head of Seattle Truth Network. Victoria, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Kason.
Good, good. So what exactly is the Seattle Truth Network? Is Seattle, like, lacking in truth or something? Maybe everybody is, huh?
Well, it does seem to be widespread lack of truth, right, these days. Anyway, we're just a group. We've been around for a few years, actually. We used to meet through Meetup, and we just get together and have conversations about truth topics, like whether it was mainstream news, alternative news, or, deeper topics like that. There was no... Even back then, there was no real platform for people to discuss this other than online. And we'd have presentations on different topics, such as, it could be political or, other alternative science topics, things like that. So it was an open platform where people could just come and discuss ideas and have a welcome audience. And so we've been doing that since about 2016, and... So it just seemed natural when this started in March of 2020 that it felt like the truth was drowning in this onslaught of media, mainstream media. And so,
what started in March of 2020? I don't remember.
Oh, let's go back. Let's look back a little bit.
kidding. Yeah.
Let's review it a little bit. Well, we go back to Friday the 13th, March 13th, seemed to set the stage as far as, the national emergency. You started to hear more and more about the coronavirus, as it was called.
Was it Friday the 13th, really? I can't remember.
It,
I didn't remember.
It was.
Oh,
I
my gosh.
I go to these things. Yeah, isn't that crazy? And so then going forward, it's easy enough for us to ignore the news. It's usually... pretty easy, but I mean, personally, goodness, it was about March 25th, I believe, when Washington State was put onto, stay home, stay healthy, basically a lockdown order, and that's when it really hit home as far as, I can't ignore the news anymore, we need to address this, and...
Let me stop you right there. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when it first started, because of the work you had done before with your group, and you're all about the truth and facts and evidence, when this kind of started, I mean, I'm sure the alarms were going off in your head, like, oh, well, hold on a second, or am I wrong in that?
You are correct. Let's just say I hit the ground running on this, because of years of being able to analyze news sources like this and see the patterns. It definitely put me ahead of the curve as far as being able to look critically at this. For example, let's just say that if you've been paying attention to the news for the last 10 years, you'd see that the facts were becoming less grounded and more questionable. So it didn't really surprise me that the mainstream news would let's just say, inflate facts. But it did, I think what shocked me was that this was now hitting home. This was, you know, forcing me to stay home, forcing me to, you know, do all of these changes to life. So, yeah, I got real curious. And
yeah. So yeah. Let me ask you this. A lot of states followed suit with, you know, stay at home. They call it quarantine. Quarantine is for sick people. And so, yeah, I call it mandatory house arrest, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think if the government restricts your movement, it's a violation. They can't, at least I know the Ohio Constitution, you have the right to assemble. And we can you know, travel, we can sojourn freely. So, I mean, these are big infringements in my opinion. And then I'm sure you hear the argument, well, if it'll help save a life, then I'll do such. And that logic, I have a problem with that logic, because if you apply that to everything, well, then you might as well just live in a cave forever, you know?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, Kason, that's what we were hearing early on, is it's like, oh, we're saving lives, you know, and all this kind of thing. But it became evident really fairly early on, that there was also a cost of lives, you know, to keep people at home. If you remember, a lot of the hospitals were actually shut down as far as elective services.
I forgot about that. Yeah, you're right.
Regular maintenance, yeah. So people were being neglected for other reasons. And so we never saw that side of the equation. You know, how many people have been lost due to lockdowns. So, yeah, and you brought the constitutionality of it. That was one of the things I researched. And, I mean, this violates the federal and state constitutions in just so many different ways. It's hard to enumerate. But in Washington state, there does seem to be a little loophole for emergency powers to the governor that has allowed him to basically turn our state into a banana republic overnight.
Right. Let's talk about
a third world dictatorship.
Right. Let's talk about that. That's funny, because I actually shopped at a banana republic in Seattle when I visited there.
That's really funny.
Yeah, that's a side story for another time. But let's talk about that for a minute. The emergency, you know, there's a lawsuit in Ohio against Daddy DeWine, we call him, our governor. And it basically kind of goes after the notion that there isn't an emergency. And I thought that was interesting. So, you know, I don't know all the, does the governor decide in your state, decide what's an emergency? And then, you know, if there isn't, you know, because the whole thing here, I'm sure it's similar there, was to flatten the curve. They said, everyone's going to get this virus. It's inevitable. That's how viruses, they move through, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then it was that, okay, so after we had flattened the curve, and it's like, so why is this still going on? Oh, well, there's spikes and blah, blah, blah. You know, what do you think about that?
Yeah, we were told the same thing as well. A two-week, you know, starting with a two-week quarantine, and then an extension after that, and then another extension, and then, you know, kind of this slow reopening with masks, more of a mobile quarantine, if you will. And so it's kind of morphed into that all year long. Now, specifically, you were asking about the emergency. As far as I can tell, the governor basically declared it himself in March and was able to just basically self-continue it through the summer. At some point, he started getting, you know, letters signed by legislative representatives to make it sound more legitimate. But basically, he's been the one pulling the strings this entire time. You know, he refers to the courts upholding his decisions. It's hard to see how that is true, but it does seem to be. It seems to be a one-man show in this state. So
yeah, it's anyway, Governor Inslee, right?
Inslee, yes.
Inslee. So yeah. I actually, I've been contacting the governor here multiple times. Of course, you get the response you get is some form letter from some intern that, you know, hits send. I'm actually surprised that some of mine even got a response. But I filed a medical malpractice, I don't know what you call it, report with the Ohio Medical Association, because my claim was that the governor, who does not hold a medical license, is requiring a medical intervention on me. And,
like a mask, you mean?
Yeah, because the FDA classifies a mask as a medical device. Therefore, the governor, who does not have a license to practice medicine in Ohio, requires me to wear a medical device, and that doesn't sound right to me. And I also called the I did it online, but I notified the Franklin County. That's the county I'm in Columbus. Franklin County Sheriff's Department of the same thing. And of course, I haven't heard back anything. It probably got deleted. But yeah. Is Governor Inslee does he hold a license to practice medicine in the state of Washington?
Absolutely not. He's actually a lawyer, so
you know, that's funny. Our governor is a lawyer too, and was the attorney general at one point. These lawyers, I tell you what, they either are the worst lawyers ever and they don't know the law, or they know the law and they know exactly how to use it against us. I don't know. Maybe I'm just crazy.
They might be the best at this point. They've been getting away with it. They've been, you know, they basically have been holding the state hostage for a year, so they're doing pretty good at what they're trying to do.
Yeah, so
he really got himself reelected by a landslide. So it might.
That's interesting. Ben Franklin, I think, is credited with saying that I could be wrong on this, but it's a cool quote anyway. That the people will have a government they deserve. So, like you said, you win by a landslide, and you're trampling all over people's rights.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing, I want you to talk more, but I'll just tell you one thing. I was very, this whole situation, this 2020 mess, has really, it's shocked me. It doesn't shock me that governments would try to gain power and individuals would try to gain power. But what really shocked me was that people don't care. And of course, not everyone. There's people like you out there. So many people, they don't seem to care that we're being abused.
Yeah.
And that's just broke my heart.
Yeah. Jason, I hear you. That's one of the most disturbing aspects of this, you know? Or even worse than that, that those of us that do care and stand up about it, you know, we get it thrown back in our face that we're trying to kill old people, you know?
Right.
So it's twisted on every level. It's really twisted, yeah.
Well, I found out about you through my sister Karis. We talked about in our little pre-interview here, and you know, she's told me some shocking things that happen when, like you said, when you're trying to help people. I think she got somebody threw a drink in her face or something, and even stuff like that. And it's just wild.
In fact, I should probably go over what we do, our activities a bit.
You're really fun to talk to and you're interesting. So I it's just like we're having coffee or something, even though we're over the phone. But yeah, go ahead and talk about
Okay. So it was last April when Governor Inslee extended the quarantine period, where that was when it hit home as far as, okay, they're not going to let this up. You know, this is just a hit and run. So basically, I just made a huge sign that said, honk if you question coronavirus, and I took it out to where people were still going, which was the park. People could still go to the park. And, gosh, I wasn't real popular there, but you know what? I found one person, and it was such an incredible connection to find one other person that was awake, that really cared, and that it really touched him to find me, you know? And so that's what I needed. I was like, okay, this is worth it. So I just was going to the park. I mean, this is March. It was cold, but I was going out to the park 2-3 times a week. That's when I went. It was on the April 19th, I want to say, that I went down to Olympia. There was a protest with thousands of people down there, and brought my sign. And that's where I met your sister, Karis, you know, and I'm so thankful that, you know, she was from Seattle, and so I got to know her. And so I invited her out with me, and so she started coming out to the park with me, and actually I started to pick up other volunteers. So what started as just me soon grew to, well, it was just me, and then there were a few others from the Truth Network group that started to come out with me, probably about 2 or 3 of those. And so then your sister started to come out. I met a delightful lady, Susan. She started to come out. Diane, she started to come out. And so we've just been building up steam. And so we started at the park. And then later, we got a big banner, a 20-foot banner, and we took that onto the freeway in Seattle. Traffic started to return to the freeway. So we were going out like probably 3 or 4 times a week during the summer on the freeway with a huge banner. And the banner said, open King County now, because that was the summer where we were kind of held in limbo as far as, are we open, are we not? And many of the businesses were just kept, you know, like they could be, you know, restaurants could be open for takeout, but not dining so much. So it was this weird space. So we were basically open King County now. There is no reason to keep King County businesses closed at all. There was no, cases were down low. There was like literally no COVID in the state, let alone the county. So that was really popular, that banner. And then going into fall, you know, the counties were more or less opened up, you know, more or less. The schools weren't open, and, you know, there were other aspects that weren't open. But basically, going into the fall, I tested out my new banner, which was literally, I made a new banner that says, the pandemic is a fraud. Investigate. Don't participate. And we've been running that one up on the freeway. We've been running it at busy intersections. We've just been taking that thing out, like, honestly, 3 or 4 times a week, pretty consistently throughout the fall. You know, now we're, during the winter, we're down to about 2 times a week, we usually do. But let me tell you, Kason, we're a lot more popular than you might think, you know, because we literally are just calling it out right there on the street. I mean, honestly, we're taking our inspiration from the childhood, you know, the nursery rhyme of, you know, the Emperor's New Clothes, where it's basically the emperor is naked and we are calling him out on it because this entire pandemic is a bluff. And I can't bear to see my fellow humans running around in masks, you know, washing their hands, Purellifying the world, that's what I like to call it. And, you know, I just can't sit down and watch this happen. I need to stand up and speak out. So it actually feels, first of all, it feels really good to get out there on the street and just, I call it standing in the truth. You're standing in the truth. It feels good. Yeah, we get, you know, gosh, your sister got a shake thrown on her. I've gotten tomatoes thrown at me. We've gotten various things. We've gotten our signs attacked, eggs, things like that. You know, it's, let alone like, just getting, people yelling at us, wear a mask, or, you know, my mom died from COVID, or, my goodness, we've been flipped off. Like, I like to say I've been flipped off 10,000 times now. but you really grow from it. I mean, my goodness, I wouldn't change a thing because I've just, I feel like I've stood up to the bully, you know, at least from where I am and what I can do. I've stood up to the bully. And I've grown from this. I've seen your sister grow from this. I mean, she's so delightful, and she's one of the sweetest people I know. But, you know, I could see her. Like, she actually is, you know, she's speaking out. And so I love to know that I've helped encourage that. And so that's what we do. But out on the street, we pass out flyers, although it's hard to pass out flyers. So it's mostly signs. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, Kason, a typical day, we get about, of the people responding to us, we usually get about 20-30% of drivers responding to us, and of those, it's generally about half positive, like supportive of our message, and about half like really, you know, angry and mean and nasty.
And getting flipped and
then,
off.
Yeah, getting flipped off, exactly. And then the rest, the rest are kind of those in-betweeners where it's like they're just kind of going along. You know, they probably have some doubts, but they're basically just complacent with it. And those are the people I like to get our signs in front of, because at some point, you know, they're hopefully, I really hope they'll wake up. You know, we're planting seeds. You know, when it comes down to, are you going to get a COVID shot? You know, I think some of these people will start to wake up. So at least we're there to plant the seeds. And you'd be surprised. I mean, this, we're going on a year now, and we still find people every time we're out that are so thankful to find us. Like, they have not heard a single voice of dissent this entire time, and they're like, wow, thank you for doing this, thank you for getting out there. And that makes it all worth it, is to find those people. But that does but overall, I've calculated that 15-20% of even Seattle, I mean, we're about the most, you know, blue, the most liberal city in the, you know, one of them in the nation, and even here, 15-20% of people really don't want this. They are awake. They don't want this, and so you won't see that picture painted for you on the mainstream media. But that is, you know, there is quite a voice here. There just is no way to really rally around it or to unite, you know, to really gather. So we feel like we're just speaking for this minority and at least empowering them, you know, creating ripple waves of empowerment that we hope are spreading. And I do believe we have been affected because we have been effective. So, I mean, in our methods, we've, you know, the lockdown in Washington State has actually been a lot less than a lot of areas. I mean, it's really restrictive in terms of like masks and things like that. And there's a lot of self-enforcement of people and on each other. But, you know, police are not enforcing this, like mask mandate. They don't enforce that. There's no one's got a ticket that I know of. I've been out without a mask all year long, and no one official has tried to harass me.
I was going to ask you about that you don't wear one, and do you go into stores, and, you know, what happens there?
Okay, yeah, let's go to that. Because that's, okay, so that's pretty much our activities. Okay, so the mask, when it came to the mask, it is, I mean, you know this. I mean, I'm sure, you know, a lot of people in my group, they do wear masks when they need to go shopping, and I don't fault anyone for that. I mean, this situation is preposterous. But I do try to encourage them, like, do what you can, you know, to send the message that you want to send, because, I mean, let's be honest, when you put a mask on, you feel like you are supporting the storyline. You feel like you're supporting it. So it's forcing you to take their side. So I will say I've managed to not wear a mask this entire time. The mask mandate started in June here in Washington State. But it has forced me to, you know, I like to say it's brought out the better in me. It's forced me to be a smarter consumer. It's forced me to be more thoughtful in what I purchase. So in that way, I mean, it actually forces you to kind of wake up, you know? I mean, I know a lot of people who have just kind of gotten along with the masks and stuff like that, and they just rush into stores and come out. And that's fine. You know, I don't blame them, but we do have to wake up that, there, you know, this isn't the new normal. You know, this isn't, you know, it's not like we can just keep complying and go along with this. At some point, we do have to, you know, it's going to change. It's going to continue to change. So not wearing a mask actually helps me wake up. I mean, I've already come to terms with the fact that I might not fly again with the way these airlines are behaving.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's just, you know, that's just part of it. It's,
well,
you know, I don't know where this is taking us, but that's my personal, that's what I practice.
Right. And I'll tell you something, Victoria. You're a soldier, you know, in a way. You really are. And the people of your group, you know, there was a time, you know, 200 and some years ago, when there were people who had to make a decision on whether to stand up for liberty or to be allowed to just be walked all over. And yeah. This is not any different. In that core sense, it's maybe different in how the tactics go. Maybe we're not, you know, actual soldiers, but I have a lot of respect for you and the work that, you know, people like you do. And I wanted to ask you, though, you know, I get that question a lot, this question a lot, which is, well, what are you, some kind of doctor? You know, and I'm like, well, no. And I've had to think about that a little bit. But, you know, just because someone wears a white coat doesn't mean they have a monopoly on the truth. So I can arrive at the truth, right? So, you know, or like the person who said, well, you know, my grandma died from COVID. Or as the CDC admitted, they combined died from and died with COVID.
Yeah.
that's horrible, actually, right? So I died from a heart attack, but I had a hangnail, so I died from a hangnail, right? Well, which one was it? So
that's good.
What do you say to people who say, well, what are you, some kind of doctor or scientist or something? What's your response to that?
Yeah, we do get that a lot, and we actually get a lot of healthcare workers, nurses, and doctors coming up and like verbally assaulting us on the street. They're highly offended by our message, no doubt, and I don't blame them. I mean, this is their livelihood, but honestly, there comes a point when they are perpetuating this fraud, and they need to speak out. So that's usually my message to them: is hey, you know the truth. You should be speaking out that your hospitals are not full, that people are not dying, you know, left, right, and center from this. You need to be speaking out. So that's what I say when they're professional. As far as, you know, an average person, like, what are you, doctor, and stuff like that, I have a few resources that I say, hey, there's plenty of doctors that are speaking out.
That's right.
You know, against the COVID fraud. Why aren't we listening to, you know, 10,000 doctors, you know, There's certain websites where these doctors are coming together and saying this. Why aren't we listening to them? And I also and then my other thing is, I don't need to be a doctor. The numbers speak for themselves, and you just need to look past the headlines and look at, you know, the numbers, you know, things like that. And also, you know, all of these lockdowns were based on, I mean, since when can you predict a virus seriously? So all of these numbers that they shut down for were based on computer modeling, and all we need to do is look back and see that none of reality didn't match the computer modeling at all. Why did we continue on this lockdown, route of lockdown?
Yeah, and I've noticed that with not just this topic, but others, as far as, you know, like you said, look past the headlines. If you, I don't know if people read newspapers anymore, but online or newspapers or even just headlines, you know, on TV, a lot of times the whole story, if you take the time to read it, there's information that actually contradicts the headline, but they know that people just read the headline and move on. You know, I don't know if you've noticed that. I've picked up on that some. And I think it was Thomas Jefferson might have said the only truth in a newspaper is in the advertisement. Which I always love that one. It's kind of true, but yeah, look past the headlines. That's a good point.
Yeah. So yeah, Kason, you don't have to be a doctor at all. I tried not to talk about the COVID-19 virus. I mean, if you look at last 2020 for basically March, April, May, you know, basically a flu season, you know, it looked like a bad flu season. So we don't need to argue about the virus itself or what, you know, where it came from or anything like that. It's actually a non-factor. It's literally, we just need to look at how it's being used on us, and that it's, the numbers do not justify that.
Yeah, so speaking of the flu, what happened to the flu? It just, like, went away.
Isn't that interesting?
I think I saw, and correct me if I'm wrong, you probably know more about this than me, but I believe somewhere, maybe CDC or something, said they weren't going to count the flu this year or track it or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought, well, that's strange.
No, you're totally right. There's all these little tells, so to speak, that people, even if they watch only the mainstream media, it should kind of wake them up a bit, you know, trigger it. So that's what that would be my message is, okay, pay a little more attention to the news that is being told to you.
Right. So, all right, well, we're at about 30 minutes. Do you want to go a little longer, or we can save it for another time, or we could talk again? I don't know. What's your thoughts? This has been really awesome.
Well, thank you, Cason. It's been great talking to you. Do you have any more questions? Is there anything else we should talk
about?
Let's
just take a quick break, and then we'll come back and do a little bit more. All right?
Okay.
We're talking with Victoria Palmer of the Seattle Truth Network. We'll be right back.
The person you are trying to reach is not available. Please leave a message after the beep.
Hi, Freedom. I haven't heard from you in a while. I know we had some good times together. I haven't heard from you. I just don't know why you won't call me back. I miss you a lot. So, you know, if you get this, give me a call back or whatever. I'd like to see you. Okay. Well, bye for now.
Hi, this is Jeremy, calling from Front Royal, Virginia, and you're listening to Awake the Iron.
Okay, and we're back. We're back here with our special guest. This has been a great conversation. Victoria Palmer of the Seattle Truth Network. Yeah, that's the website, right? SeattleTruthNetwork.com? Go ahead and tell us about that.
Yeah, visit us on SeattleTruthNetwork.com. And you can see, you know, some of the pictures of our signs and our campaigns. Feel free to contact me there, too, through the website. Even if you're out of the area, you know, you might enjoy my newsletter that you can sign up for. And ideally, you know, I'd like to inspire people in other areas to do this and just speak up. In fact, actually, I mean, you don't have to have signs. You don't have to be an organized group to really stand in the truth, like wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whatever walk of life you're in.
Yeah. You know, I'm from Ohio, so I'm not really tuned into Washington and Seattle. My sister lives in Seattle, but I saw on your website that it said you were looking at the death rates for different years, and that this year was actually a little lower than usual.
Yeah, actually.
How could that be?
Listen to this. This was Washington State figures comparing, I believe it was the first 6 months of the year for 4 years. So basically, we just took the numbers given to us, and actually your sister helped on this. She was awesome. And ran the numbers, put them into an Excel graph, and 2020 was actually lower as far as death rate per 1,000 of population. And so that's where it's like, okay, are we saving lives here? I mean, what is this, you know, where are the lives being saved here? Now, that was just Washington State. But it goes to show that, you know, we were on lockdown, probably one of the more strict states in the nation. And, you know, was that really called for? Now, going forward after June, we have looked at the numbers again. You know, it gets a little hard to tell, you know, how much things are being affected by other factors. The lockdown itself started to take a toll on death. So, but the bottom line is that segment, that glimpse of the death rate showed no excess mortality. So, to me, that is a fraud. I mean, if it was a fraud back when it started, it's still a fraud.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that stuck out to me on your website, that's SeattleTruthNetwork.com, it said, this is a quote from there, it says, if we hold our ground and keep vaccination rates under 50%, they will not be able to treat unvaccinated like second-class citizens.
Yeah,
that's, I agree. What do you think is going to happen? I had another thing here that the dictator, I'm sorry, the governor of Washington there had a goal of 60-70% vaccinated, yeah, you know, population, or maybe more, hopefully, he's probably thinking. But yeah, do you think, I always joked and said, well, I'm not going to get the vaccine even if someone had a gun pointed in my head. And then I started thinking, well, it might actually come to that.
Yeah, I mean, Jason, this year has been crazy. Who would have thought that we would have to be faced with even wearing a mask, let alone getting a vaccine, that just to go back to some sort of normal, you know? I mean, it feels like we've been hijacked here. So let's go back to, the idea of, you know, if the governor has his way and gets 60-70% of the population vaccinated, it's as if he has a hold on the population and then can use that as leverage against those who really don't want to take it to kind of force them into it, this whole thing is unconscionable as far as a vaccine being a medical procedure that should be done under medical supervision. And to just willy-nilly, you know, prescribe it for the whole state. You were mentioning that. Your governor's not a doctor. Well, you know, this is a medical procedure, even more than a mask, even more invasive than a mask.
Right,
so,
right.
And we see the writing on the wall. You know, as of now, no state has mandated a vaccine, and it's actually questionable if they can actually do that.
Well, they've done a lot of things that they can't do. They've done a lot of things that they shouldn't or can't do, and people, you know, don't seem to say anything or do anything about it. Some people, but I have this feeling that it's just a feeling. I can't prove this, that they might, you know, use the people against each other. We've already seen that with like masks and stuff. But what I mean is to pressure people, say, hey, if you know anybody that isn't getting vaccinated, you know, you need to talk them into it or pressure them. And so your line here about being treated like second class citizens, it really hit home with me, because I see that as a possibility.
Yeah, it does seem to be their intention, as far as, you know, they're going to steamroll this thing and get as many people vaccinated as possible. And then literally, you know, if that works for them, they can pretty much marginalize the rest of us and just let us, you know, live out our lives as second-class citizens, literally. So it's pretty scary where that goes.
Now,
the good news, I mean, people are rejecting this vaccine. You know, the mainstream is covering it so much, but I'll tell you, people are awake to this. In Washington State, I'll share with you, in Washington State, Governor Inslee seems to be his full-time job to push this COVID vaccine on the state. So
yeah, that's kind of weird, isn't it? Yeah.
We should be a little suspicious about this. You know, it's really weird. So anyway, every press conference, he's giving us updates and all of this stuff. And by the way, he's doing this in association with the Washington Military Department, and he's getting support from the Washington National Guard, you know, to go to these, you know, he's opened up mass vaccination sites in certain locations.
Yeah, that's weird.
So yeah, they really mean this. So like you were mentioning gunpoint, as far as they're kind of playing that hand a little bit. It's still, you know, it's just all friendly, you know, right now. But yeah, they do seem to be hinting at that. But his original plan was to start with healthcare workers, and then in the name of equity, they were going to release the vaccine to the ethnic communities, especially the minorities and the colored people, as he calls them. But you know what? The colored community rejected it, and so
really? They
had to rethink their plan. And he knows this. They had to change their plan. So instead of going after the ethnic communities next, they changed to the elderly population. And so it's really sad that they have been mass vaccinating. They were starting with 70 and over. Now they change it to 65 and over to push more vaccine, as they call it. Actually, the phrase they use is to get shots in arms of Washingtonians. And that's just really creepy to me.
Yeah.
But they're picking on the old, you know, the older population. And so they're really trying to, and healthcare workers, and I think now open it up to certain other worker categories over age 50. So they're really going after these, you know, high-risk populations. But from what I've heard, healthcare workers, even healthcare workers, the ones that should be most supportive of it, are actually balking at it, and to the tune of, I mean, I couldn't tell you exactly here, but I've gotten feedback from several healthcare workers themselves saying that they're not taking it, and they know people that aren't taking it. So
yeah, so is that a I've heard some of that too. You know, a lot of people that work in hospitals and things, they say, well, you know, I have to get it, and I'm like, I don't think you do. I mean, you know, they might make you. I don't know what do they do? I think people just assume they have to because they're told they have to, but they really don't have to. And you can't like be fired or anything. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they can, you know, make you do clean toilets or something. I don't know. Is that how does that work?
Well, you know, that's really interesting you say that. It's a mind game, and so the media seems to be putting out there this idea that employers can mandate it. You know, so we're reading that, but. And I've heard it through a few other people that say that my employer is going to start mandating it. But I have yet to see a written policy that says this, because these employers, they're playing this game too. You know, they feel like they have to mandate it. But, are they really going to put themselves as liable for any and all side effects from this? So it's a real mind game right now. But the bottom line is that I haven't heard one firm... employer mandate, you know, firm meaning in writing, you have to do this. And I've only heard them, you know, potentially. So even the healthcare workers, they can sign a waiver at this point. They can waive it. But you're right. As far as accommodating them, yeah, they might get put in the back room or, a mask forever. But that's where, you know, they can only do that to a certain extent. So if we can keep the rate below 50%, you know, what are they going to do? They can't penalize over half of their employees. You know, they have to have people working the front line, so to speak, working with people. So it really weakens their argument. And I think it's working, actually, the fact that people are rejecting it and that these employer mandates are getting weaker and weaker. I'm going to tell you, I watch Bernie Sanders in these press conferences, and he just seems to be getting more desperate every time, counting on people's goodwill to do the right thing and get vaccinated. It's just...
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. He seems pretty nervous, like he's not fulfilling his sales quota or something like that.
Right, it seems weird. Well, let me ask you this. We're going to go deep here. Why is this happening? So there's this virus, blah, blah, blah. But all this other stuff that were, you know, the people in power forcing people to do something. So it could be about anything, but right now it's about this. So why is this happening like this?
That's a really good question.
Maybe that's the $64 million question. I don't know.
Totally. Well, heck, I guess out there, I'm as qualified as anyone having, you know, 10 plus years of, you know, conspiracy studies and whatnot. But you don't even have, honestly, you don't have to go into conspiracy studies because, you know, these guys are coming out and telling us. We've got Bill Gates, we've got, who's that guy from the, Clause something, I can't even remember their names, but these big, basically, international players, the elite, so to speak.
Sure.
I mean, they basically come out and told us that this is an economic restructuring. And from the clues that I can see, here's my personal opinion. From the clues that I can see, it would appear that they are basically, they want to move to a cashless society, which would mean that we need to be wirelessly connected to, you know, the economic grid. And so it would make sense that something in the vaccine will, you know, nanotechnology of some sort would connect us so that our accounts will be properly used for whatever services we want. And it seems to be going that way because technology has really driven our society for the last few decades, and we've pretty much just gone along with it. This will, you know, basically demands 100% compliance. Basically, if they want to get rid of cash, they want to get rid of probably credit cards, probably smartphone apps, and just turn it into a, you know, wave of your hand, so to speak, or a, you know, you walk by an RFID checkpoint and your account is credited. I mean, I'm sure that's what they're envisioning. It's, you know, it's a few decades away, but let's be honest, who are the big supporters? Who they really need to buy in is the millennials, you know, that generation of the youth that is pretty much already wrapped up in technology, and so we'll probably will accept it.
Well, that reminds me of, I was copied on a conversation about, somebody was saying that in some other countries, there a lot of their COVID deaths, and you know, even if those numbers are real, which a lot of them I don't trust, but anyway, they said,
yeah,
the COVID deaths in such country, you know, are so much less because at the beginning they did this and this, and they had contact tracing, and you'd get a text if someone was within this distance of you from having it, and then they were doing this and this, and they were describing this like 1984 type situation, and I believe they were talking about it as if it was a good thing, and I just thinking that sounds like hell on earth. And
yeah,
I thought, like I said in the beginning, when I got my heart broken, because I was under the impression that if we choose to live here, then we are choosing to live in a free society, and in a free society there are some risks, but you're guaranteed your freedom. You're not guaranteed your safety. You're not guaranteed, you know, anything else, but you're guaranteed your freedom. And there's some risks that come with that. And I just couldn't help but thinking, if that over there is what you want, then maybe just go there. But we don't need to change. And I mean that in the kindest way, that how fortunate for some people that what they want exists elsewhere. And why do we have to change this place into that place? Just go to that place and leave this place alone. Am I wrong in that?
No, you know what? This certainly is the America I signed up for.
Right, I'm choosing, you know, to live here.
Yeah, so, but all of a sudden, we don't seem to have a choice in the matter. That's what's really scary, especially if you factor in, you know, election fraud, you know, things like that. I try not to get political, but it seems pretty clear that we don't really have a choice in this matter. I think, and Jason, just to get a little, but our involvement in it would seem, it does seem that our nation, indeed the world economy, is basically bankrupt. I mean, we all kind of knew that, you know, our economy was on some kind of a collision course with, you know, with doom, because it just always seemed to be too much waste, too much interest, too much borrowing, too much debt, you know? So I think there is an inevitable factor in that as far as some restructuring necessary, but, you know, basically the new economy is going to be brought to us by the same people that brought us the old economy. So I don't think it's in our best interest.
Great. Yeah. I was just thinking, great, great.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, I would say that basically we are the collateral for this new refinancing. You know, our bodies, indeed, are the collateral, which is why they feel the need to claim them. They're trying to get our cooperation in this matter, but they seem to think they own us. So,
yeah, that's interesting you say that. Our bodies are the collateral. I'm hoping to do an episode about the corporation of the United States, and
yeah,
I don't know if you,
there
sounds
you go.
Like sounds like your point to that. That'll be another episode. But I wanted to ask you one more thing. We're if you just got another minute, I kind of wanted to go back a little bit. Do you know this doctor? Her name is Carrie Madege. I think you say it like that. She explained. She had this video that was posted. It lasted on YouTube. I don't even think it lasted 24 hours, and it got yanked, censored, of course. But she apparently was on some medical boards of a hospital or whatever for years, so she was like a high up. And she said that she was involved in several meetings where they talked about having nanotechnology, and they needed a delivery system for it. And the technology was ready, but they didn't have a good way to have a delivery system.
I know what you're talking about.
Okay, and she was saying that this vaccine could be it. This could be it. And I found it very interesting, and this goes into a whole other thing about the 5G signal, and that, you know, it's basically, if you had some kind of technology in your body, we already have phones pretty much on our body all the time, but if you have it in your body, then it's 100% monitoring. And then if you have a signal powerful enough to retrieve data from anywhere, like 5G, then that could be it. I don't know. This lady said that. She's her stuff's been pulled from here and there. You can still find it on, what's that called? BitChute, I think it's called. Or you can uncensor things. What do you know anything about that? Or have you heard about that?
You know what? I do know what you're talking about. The name escapes me at the moment, but she's probably spot on. I mean, we don't have to look far, you know. I mean, Bill Gates is a big proponent of this. What does he have to do with it except for being that tech kind of a, you know, prophet is what they call them. So, yeah, big tech is deep in this, and they stand to benefit from just huge, I mean, all the data we're going to be emitting when, you know, it's in our body, it's implanted in our body, and every checkpoint we go by scans us, you know. I mean, this is the end of privacy, basically.
Pretty much. You're right. No. You're right.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to stress this on this podcast quite a bit, that I might be wrong about something, but I'm not a liar. And, so, you know, I don't want people to listen and just take everything that, you know, I say or my guests say and just swallow that and say, oh, that's the truth. You know, look into it, right? Don't trust me. I think Reagan said trust but verify. I think he was talking about nukes in Russia, but I like that quote, trust but verify. And you have to, I like what you said. You said look beyond the headlines. You have to, you know, Google, YouTube. It's all, the algorithms are all tailored to omit certain things. And you kind of wonder, well, why is that? Why can't I look at whatever I want information, and then I decide, you know, what I want to accept and not accept? Why do there have to be a gatekeeper for me? That's got to be a weird thing for people to think about. And I know we're getting a little off topic, but it kind of all ties in together, I think.
Yeah, well, Kason, let's look at this. These original predictions of the virus were, you know, based on numbers crunched through the new computer AI systems. Let's look at the censorship that you're running into. It's basically unleashing AI censorship on the internet. So I think, you know, a lot of this chaos that we've been experiencing is, let's just say there's an AI running things, or you know, like basically interacting with us through humans through the internet, and it's so it, you know, things stopped making sense actually. Anyway, just look, you know, trying to pull that AI string, and I think it'll explain a lot of things.
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing to go down, isn't it?
Yeah, this is, yeah, a whole nother rabbit hole.
Yeah, but you know, this is why I'm hoping to have excellent guests like yourself on.
Yeah.
Who, because you know, everyone has their area of specialty, and and usually they overlap to some degree. And I'm sensing that about you, that when you start down some of these little rabbit holes, it becomes a spider web, and every little tangent can just take you on and on and on. And it's all connected, and this has been excellent, and I really appreciate it. You know, I've had you for about an hour, and that's I could talk to you forever. This is great. But
thank you, Kason. Can I wrap up with some words of encouragement?
Yes, please do. I need a lot of that, and I think anyone listening might too.
And you know, I think it is. It's crucial. In fact, you know, I've been studying conspiracy for, you know, 10 years now, and it can be very demoralizing. So I tried. So I try to get back to that. You know, what really matters in life, and I think this year, if it's taught us anything, it's that these agencies we thought were taking care of us, such as government, medicine, technology, they actually haven't been our friend this entire time, and they seem to be turning on us. But this is why, you know, I tell people, let this bring out the best in you. We become reliant on these things. We become, they become ingrained a part of our lives, but they're not really what matters. What really matters is relationships to the people in our lives, and also let's be honest, a relationship with God or some higher power, whatever it is in your life, whatever your personal beliefs are, it's time we get back to these things that really matter, and become a better person and wake up to the fact that it doesn't matter what happens in the material world like this. We actually can be, you know, we can be better people and actually be happier as things progress, regardless of what they do. So that would be my message.
That's great. And I got a quick joke for you.
Okay, let's hear.
Okay. Do you know why COVID-19 doesn't affect the Amish?
Oh, that's a really good one. I haven't heard that, but I do think about the Amish a lot as far as just keeping to that simple lifestyle. But let's hear it. Okay, let's
yeah,
hear you.
So the reason that they're not affected by COVID-19... they don't have TV.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That goes along with, you know, COVID-19 is a mental disorder. it goes into their heads. It really is.
Right, right.
That's really good. I mean, honestly, we have been prepared for this through decades of movies about contagion and viruses and vaccines. And things like that actually don't really occur in real life. I mean, you can even go back and question the Spanish flu as far as that. That's just another tale that we're told. And I get, you know what I hear as another thing I get thrown at me as evidence is Typhoid Mary. You know, there's evidence for you. There's science.
Right, right.
But it's really just all these legends and myths and television movies and shows put together. So you are, that is a really good one, because the Amish, they kind of just stick to the real world facts. So who knows, Casey? We might find ourselves on a farm somewhere just living happily ever after.
maybe. Well, you know, I really appreciate your time. You were with me for a really long time. This was awesome. Yeah. Probably love to have you back. I'm planning on having an episode about viruses, actually, you know, that I there's a lot of things that point to that, you know, that we might be mistaken about how they operate,
yeah,
and what they even are. And I don't know, it'd be great to maybe have you back for something like that.
Well, thank you, Jason. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I think you're doing a great job, and I would love to come back sometime.
That would be great. Well, I really appreciate your time. I'm going to let you go. I've held you really long. Thank you very much. Thank you for your activism. This is Victoria Palmer from the Seattle TruthNetwork.com. Check it out. So I really appreciate it, Victoria. We'll speak again.
Awesome. Thank you. You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was awesome. This is what Awake the Iron is about, guys, right here. People in the middle of it. Boots on the ground. And we're not afraid to talk about stuff. You know, I'm not going to back down from the truth. These topics, they go so deep. And I watch my people, I watch Americans get pushed around. And I don't like bullies. We got to stand up for each other. People who desire power, people who want to control you, want to use you, they want you to be their slave in one way or another. They want your mind. They want to control your mind. I'm not having it. Hopefully, some of these topics, that, like Victoria said there, it feels heavy, and we get down, and we get low. But there are good people. there is good out there. There is truth. I don't know all of the truth. I desire the truth. I have no agenda other than finding the truth. So this has been a fun episode. It's been good. We'll have to have her back. Have to have her back for another talk. Man, I could talk to her forever. Anyway, appreciate you guys listening. We'll have you back for the next episode. Some of these might carry over a little bit. You know, I was thinking an hour an episode. I must have been an idiot thinking that some of this stuff couldn't be covered in 1 hour. But I'm looking forward to more. And hopefully you are too. And that's it for me for this time. This is Cason Pratt with Awake the Iron. We'll see ya.
Awake the Iron.